Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Mike and Walt, and welcome again to another edition of Ask the Blood Detective. And today's topic is sugar, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I can tell you, I don't think that there is another topic that has created so much confusion, so much concern than that of the potential effects of consuming too much sugar. What I wanted to do during this talk is to answer many of the questions that you listeners have sent to me. I've got a list of them here in terms of, can sugar cause inflammation? Can sugar affect my immune system? What about heart disease and depression and acne? So I'm going to go down the list and give you a summary of my thoughts on how sugar does or does not impact over 30 or 40 different issues. So that's a lot of your questions. But first, I think some very important fundamentals regarding sugar should be discussed. For one, I think it's fair to admit that at least most of us, or at least most traditional Americans, meaning those who eat the standard American diet or the SAD diet, S-A-D for SAD, basically are addicted to sugar. They love sugar. And the manufacturers of various food products know this. They use sugar to help preserve the food. They use sugars in cakes and desserty foods to give them moisture and texture. Sugar can enhance the shelf life of foods, but putting all of those seemingly practical reasons for using sugar aside, I think the main reason why industry uses sugar is that it tastes really good. I believe it's addictive, and people simply buy more and more and more of it. And as we've seen over the last few hundred years or so, as the level of refined and processed sugars have increased in the diet, so has the rate of various diseases. Now, it is fair to say that maybe all the blame cannot be placed on sugar, and I agree with that. We also have had over the last few hundred years, and since the advent of the Industrial Revolution and the processing and production of sugarcane, is that we also are consuming more meat. And that meat is not like the free-range variety, which was lower in fat and basically void of antibiotics and growth hormones and other types of chemicals. And we've got a diet that's less in fiber. And the list goes on and on in terms of how our diet has changed over the last few hundred years and how that may have impacted our current level of health and disease statistics that we see today. But I think it is fair to say that sugar is at least one of the main culprits. So I'll be assuming that you agree with me for the rest of the show. And for those of you who do not, or if you have other questions and comments, I encourage you to post them on my blog found at www.integratednutritionny.com, or you can email me your questions, concerns, and show topics to info@integratednutritionny.com or info@blooddetective.com. So a couple of basic things. You know, sugars are carbohydrates, and carbohydrates are basically sugars. And there are different types of carbohydrates. There are the simple carbohydrates, and there are what are known as the complex carbohydrates. And the basic difference between those forms of sugar is that the more complex ones are the more natural ones, like, let's say, grains or vegetables, like root vegetables, for example, and fruits, that have a complex form of carbohydrate, exceptions being grapes, which are predominantly glucose, and glucose is what's called a monosaccharide, the term saccharide referring to carbohydrate or sugars, and it's the glucose, the simple sugar, that acts very quickly on the body, causing an insulin response, among other responses in the body. And I think fundamentally, it's thought that the more abruptly a food, or anything for that matter, affects the blood sugar and causes an insulin rise, the more potentially damaging it can be. And those would be the refined and processed or simple sugars. The unrefined sugars, those found in foods in nature for the most part, are considered healthier. But even among vegetables and even among fruits and grains, for example, there are varying what are known as glycemic responses. And that basically refers to the potential of a particular food, like those I just mentioned in those categories, that tend to cause a more abrupt increase in blood sugar and therefore a more vigorous insulin response by the pancreas. And again, as the theory goes, as time goes on and we continually expose ourselves to foods that are either high on the glycemic index scale with the potential of causing these swings in blood sugar that I'm mentioning, and also simple sugars, which of course are also by nature higher on the glycemic index, that our body simply gets worn down. And that wearing down and a loss of ability to properly handle blood sugar can cause a myriad of health problems far beyond those of diabetes or the typical blood sugar problem or hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. And I should say at this point too that many of you out there that eat a big meal and you feel weak and brain foggy and fatigued shortly thereafter, that's what is known most likely as a reactive or postprandial hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Eventually, it's thought, and I've seen this in my patients over the last 26 or so years, that those that are hypoglycemic tend to become hyperglycemic over a period of time. Initially, the hypo or low blood sugar is produced when the body has a very vigorous insulin response, and insulin helps metabolize the sugar, lowering the level. But if the pancreas is continually bombarded and forced to overproduce insulin, one of at least two things happen, or both of these things. The body eventually begins, the pancreas fails to make the appropriate amount of insulin, so it can't lower the blood sugar anymore, so the low blood sugar eventually becomes high blood sugar. And also, insulin becomes quite resistant. So the insulin could be there, even in normal amounts. It could even be produced in excess by the pancreas, but it doesn't work because insulin resistance has developed. And what you don't hear a lot on the radio or in books or anywhere that I commonly look for this information is that there are many other things besides sugar that cause blood sugar swings. So for example, lots of the so-called sugar-free foods that have certain types of sugar known as sugar alcohols, such as sorbitol and xylitol, they add sweetness and they do add fewer carbs to the product, but they still may have enough carbs to cause a jump in blood sugar. Chinese food is another example. High-fat foods, and Chinese food is an example of that being mostly fried on a skillet, tend to promote higher blood sugar by keeping blood sugar levels higher for longer. The same is true for pizza and French fries, anything with a lot of carbohydrates and a lot of fats. Even having a cold or any sort of infection or any chronic illness can cause blood sugar problems. And even medications for a cold or bacterial infections, such as antibiotics and decongestants, they will also potentially cause blood sugar problems. Stress, we know that stress through the action of stress hormones and stress effects on a number of body systems like the autonomic nervous system generally causes blood sugar levels to rise. And bagels seem to come up a lot with some of my patients that don't seem to realize that bagels are, you know, refined processed carbohydrates with basically no fiber or nutritional content, which is very quickly broken down into simple sugars, causing a marked rise in blood sugar levels. Another thing I see as I review the dietary logs that I request of my patients is a lot of the sports drinks. Now, for athletes, there is a place for sports drinks. For example, post exercise consumption of sports drinks, which have various types of simple and slightly more complex sugars, along with protein, like whey protein, is known to help recovery, to help improve the storage of a certain type of a sugar, the storage form of sugar known as glycogen in both the liver and muscles. And that allows athletes to do better for the next exercise bout. But children and people who exercise but not hard enough to substantiate the use of a sports drink are really suffering, because they will cause, unless you're burning this stuff off, they will cause marked increases in blood sugar. Dried fruits as well, whether they're natural or not, are loaded with complex carbohydrates, but because of the amounts of these dried fruits that are consumed, you know, we're talking about three dates, for example, has as much as 15 grams of sugar. That's just a lot of sugar, even natural sugar, for the body to deal with in such a concentrated form as dry fruits. I'm not saying that dry fruits are bad. Dry fruits snacked with throughout the course of the day, particularly in a, or preferably in a trail mix where you have unroasted nuts, which are high in proteins, as well as unrefined carbs and non-oxidized or saturated fats, are a bit healthier. And there's a number of drugs that will cause hyperglycemia. Corticosteroids, for example, such as prednisone, which is used to treat, you know, asthma and arthritis and rashes and inflammatory bowel disease, you name it. The list is very long. Steroids are used for lots of conditions, are known to perpetuate, if these drugs are not used carefully, hyperglycemia or even diabetes. Diuretics, which help to lower blood sugar because they reduce the volume of water in the body, they also can cause blood sugar issues. Antidepressants tend to lower blood sugar, on the other hand. Decongestants, such as the pseudoephedrine and phenylephrine, also raise blood sugar. Many of the cold medications have actual sugar or sugar alcohols in them. So it's very important that if you are known to have a blood sugar issue, or you suspect that you might, speak to your healthcare provider, ask your pharmacist about the medications before you take them. Birth control pills, being predominantly estrogen, are known to affect how the body handles insulin. Yet oral contraceptives are given to even diabetic women, and I think that needs to be reconsidered for obvious reasons. Now, just a word about exercise for a moment. We know that exercise helps lower blood sugar. It helps even diabetics with the highest levels of blood sugar. But over-exercising in context with the either inappropriate diet, improper balance of protein, carbs, and fats, even the timing of your intake of foods around exercise can promote hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Probiotics, or foods that have probiotics or beneficial bacteria, such as yogurt, are known to, of course, improve digestion, but they also help control blood sugar. But be careful, because as many of you know, a good number of yogurts, commercially available yogurts, have extra sugar added. It may also be in the form of fruit, which, again, shouldn't be a problem for most individuals, but it could be a problem for some. We know that a vegan diet, for example, is a good thing, particularly for people with the type 2 or the non-insulin-dependent diabetes, that the blood sugar control is much better, and the amount of blood sugar controlling medications is markedly reduced. So it's important to share this information in terms of your dietary habits with your doctor, who may be helping you manage your blood sugar. Many of us know that just adding a sprinkle of the spice cinnamon, which gives a delicious flavor, without adding any added salt or calories or carbs to a food, will help blood sugar. We know that cinnamon itself has been studied and shown to improve how insulin works, meaning particularly for those with hyper or high blood sugar, improved insulin will bring blood sugars down, particularly in the type 2 diabetic. And speaking of diabetics, those with diabetes who take naps, for example, napping and just regular sleep can cause blood sugar levels to drop actually very, very dangerously, particularly if the diabetic takes insulin. So it's very important to check blood levels at bedtime and also when you wake up, and, you know, snacking and timing your snacking appropriately. For some individuals, not just diabetics, we know that blood sugar can, you know, rise in the morning when there's a drop in insulin naturally. So needless to say, blood sugar monitoring is more or less important for different individuals. And no conversation about blood sugar would be complete unless we spoke about alcohol intake. We know that alcohol drinks, they're loaded with carbohydrates. So first they'll raise your blood sugar, but then levels of blood sugar generally drop over the course of about 10 to 12 hours after drinking. Even the American Diabetes Association seems to know, and they advise that no more than one drink a day should be consumed for women and two drinks for a man. And in some individuals, I find that's too much. But it also might be allowable depending on the timing of other foods. So for example, before you have alcohol, you might want to eat a higher protein meal and or a high fiber meal. So there are strategies that can help you, and forgive the euphemism, have your cake and eat it too. And one drink, by the way, is about 5 ounces of wine or approximately 12 ounces of beer or 1.5 ounces of liquor like whiskey or vodka. And there are external factors such as how hot or cold it is outside that can affect blood sugar. For example, heat makes your blood sugar much harder to control. One of the reasons for that might be due to dehydration, as dehydration seems to be associated with hyperglycemia. And hormones, particularly female hormones, may also affect blood sugar. So if you suspect you have a blood sugar problem and you're still menstruating, you may want to keep a monthly record of your blood sugar levels relative to your menstrual cycle and, you know, share that with your healthcare provider. It's usually very revealing. So again, we know that industry uses sugar to preserve food, to give cakes, for example, more moisture and texture. Sugar also helps to increase the shelf life of food. But the main reason, I believe, is because people love sugar. They tend to become addicted to sugar. They buy more of it, and that's what drives everything. So let's talk about a little bit of a simple chemistry lesson regarding sugars. So sugars are carbohydrates. They're needed for energy in the body. And problems with blood sugar handling tends to result from improper metabolism and physiology in an individual regarding how they break down the food and how it eventually gets to become glucose. Because all foods, proteins, carbs, and fats eventually are broken down to glucose and fed into a metabolic system in the body found in virtually all of our cells known as the Krebs cycle. And I think it's important for the general public to recognize that there are many types of sugars, natural sugars and those that are, of course, artificial. One of the more common forms of sugar is sucrose. And sucrose is what's found in the dessert foods and is really the bad sugar. Whether or not some of you realize it or not, when you think about sugar being bad, you're probably talking about sucrose and also glucose. But sucrose is table sugar. Sucrose is what's known as a disaccharide. Di means two. It's made out of two simple sugars. One sugar is called a monosaccharide. When you put two sugars together, namely glucose and fructose, they become a new molecule known as sucrose. But also fruits and vegetables contain fructose and glucose. But they also contain fibers and phytonutrients and a certain amount of electrolytically balanced minerals, and that is has a very profound effect upon how the body manages those foods. So they're not metabolized the same than if you were to strip them of minerals and strip them of phytonutrients and strip them of fiber. It's when you simplify them too much, that's when the problems begin. Now, many of you have heard of high and low glycemic foods. Basically, high glycemic foods are foods that, when consumed in most people, we think, they tend to cause a hyperglycemic or high blood sugar reaction. And then there are low glycemic index foods. And I do consult these charts with different people, but I've also found that the charts of the hyper and hypoglycemic foods or the low or high glycemic foods are not accurate for many people. There are many other factors, including medications and sleep and stress and exercise and all sorts of factors that affect how one manages foods. One particular patient that I had reacted as if a steak was a high glycemic index food, which it's not, but her blood sugar responded as if it was. When she ate white bread, she didn't have a hyperglycemic reaction. Very strange, but she was on a whole list of medications that may have blunted these adverse reactions, but of course are probably causing other issues as well. There's all sorts of different types of sugars. I'll just mention a few. There's what's known as invert sugar. There's corn syrup, which of course we've all heard of, and high fructose corn syrup. There's honey, which some of us have the impression that honey might be a safer form of natural sugar. And for some, it's true because honey's mostly fructose. It's a bit easier to handle than sucrose and glucose. But honey also has minerals and other immunologic factors. So, it would be a better choice for some, but that choice or whatever choices we make for sugar need to be based on an individual's, you know, health problems and health goals and medications and genetics and other health problems. So it's not one sugar fits all, except it is fair to say, in my opinion, that glucose and sucrose are not sugars that we should be consuming as refined processed within foods that are highly processed. My hesitation there was because grapes, for example, green grapes and purple grapes, they are entirely glucose, but there's fiber, phytonutrients, and all of that, but they will raise blood sugar levels much, much more quickly than any other fruit. So I take advantage of that when I load myself a bit before a hard, long exercise run, for example, and then especially post-exercise, you want more simple sugars, particularly more natural simple sugars that you can get from grapes that will more quickly and readily replenish glycogen stores in both the liver and the muscle so that you recover better, and science has demonstrated that your next exercise bouts are better. So that's known as nutrient timing, and that's a whole other specialty. And as a double certified sports nutritionist, I can tell you it's a very complex but very, very interesting area. A lot of what I've learned in sports nutrition, I apply to chronic disease because athletes need more, better, more accurate control of things than a lot of individuals, but so do sick people. So a lot of the concepts apply to both, but everything is always individualized. That is the blood detective way. No generalities here. So the million-dollar question is sugar safe? Well, I suppose that depends on who you're asking. If you ask the FDA, according to their statement, they basically have categorized sugars as generally recognized as safe, with the acronym GRAS, G-R-A-S. And in their statement, they basically said that other than dental caries, you know, dental decay, that there's no conclusive evidence that sugars are a hazard or a biohazard to one's health. But this is not true because the National Library of Medicine is loaded with articles and research that demonstrates the issues with blood sugar, not to mention I think our common sense has exceeded science. First of all, to think that one should not be cautious about the consumption of sugar or anything for that matter, just because there might not be conclusive evidence. I mean, that's a very tough standard. For something to be conclusive, which is also very much open to interpretation, we might be waiting a very long time for that to happen. If you eat sugar or have had a bad diet and you eliminate that and you feel better, you've got your answer. But then, on the other hand, you might eliminate all the bad stuff, but because you've consumed it for so long and because it may have created other perturbations or problems with your physiology, just because you eliminate the bad guy, so to speak, doesn't mean your body will or can recover. So you might be confused in that case. People, patients will say to me, Dr. Wald, you know, I eliminated all of the bad stuff that you told me to do it, but I'm still not well. Why is that? Again, it's sort of like bombing an area, and just because you stop the bombing, thinking that the area is going to somehow clean itself up. I mean, given enough time, the earth will recycle itself, but I think you get the idea that we may have a lot of work to do before we correct the problems that have resulted due to a lifelong consumption of different types of sugars. As far as sugars on food labels, there's no recommended daily intake or recommended daily value for sugars, other than to say that, at least according to a fairly old paper by the Institute of Medicine Dietary Reference, or the DRI, in 2002, they set a sort of a guideline that our diet should have no greater than 25% sugar. And when we go beyond that, we can screw around with our calcium balance, our zinc balance, and our vitamin A. They don't go into a lot of detail, but the ways in which sugar can affect us, and with people that consume a lot less, you know, how too much or too little sugar, that depends on the person. So we need to start with food logs and some calculations. We need to look at the entire body or as many body systems at once that is possible to figure this out. And then in terms of the Food and Drug Administration or the FDA's food guidelines on labels, they'll have these terms, we've all seen them, like sugar-free, which by definition means that particular food has less than 0.5 grams per serving of sugar, or less than 1 gram. A gram is 1,000 milligrams. So this particular food, which would be less than 0.5, would be less than 500 milligrams. And then there's the reduced sugar label that we sometimes see, which means that particular food, now get this, must have less than 25% less sugar than the regular product it's compared to. So both products could be loaded with sugar, but if the reduced sugar product has less than 25%, it can say reduced sugar, and that's very confusing for the average individual who, I dare say, is still, even on this day, in this day and age, clued into the sugar problems that we have. And then there are labels like without added sugar or no sugar added. These could still be problems in foods depending on the amount of natural sugars and the processing of the food, whether or not that will cause a sugar problem in an individual. So a quick review of some basic sugar molecules. There's fructose, as I've mentioned a few times. You'll find that in fruits and vegetables, honey, root vegetables in particular. Some fruits and vegetables and foods in general have more or less fructose, so they'll be higher or lower on the glycemic index just based on sugar content. But as I said before, and this is very important for you to hear, just because something is low on the glycemic index, supposedly healthy, does not mean that your body will interpret it that way. And sometimes the same is even true for something that's supposedly high on the glycemic index, just like the example I gave you a little while ago. And then there's high fructose corn syrup, which is a liquid mix of fructose. And fructose is by itself very problemsome. It used to be the sugar substitute recommended for diabetics before, after a few years, they figured out, oh, it worsens diabetics. This is why, when in doubt, I always defer to natural. Now, fructose found in fruits and vegetables are clearly natural. And for the most part, where you want to start with your dietary considerations. But if you have food allergies, or you want to avoid foods with gluten, or foods that are GMO that might be favorable in terms of their natural sugar makeup, as you can see, there are other considerations when choosing foods. If you have a malabsorption problem, if you're on various medications, if you have chronic inflammatory problems, all of these and other factors can influence how your body manages sugar. Most of the time, patients will see me and they've only gotten to, you know, first base in terms of sugar. They have a concept that sugar is bad. They really do not know the difference between different sugars. For example, it's astounding to me that some of my colleagues, not all obviously, but some have recommended to their patients who are now seeing me because they didn't get better, that to eliminate fruit. They'll tell them that fruit might cause fungal overgrowth or that fruit is bad for them. Fruit is generally safe even for diabetics. It's the mishandling of the sugar that can cause fungal overgrowth, such as yeast infections or systemic yeast problems or even oral thrush. So let me say that again. It's not only the sugar or the type of sugar that may lend itself to sugar problems and then perpetuating infections, overgrowth like fungal overgrowth, but it's how the body is mishandling the sugar. And the mishandling of the sugar has to do with the genetics of the individual. And again, the other factors, like I mentioned before, stress, exercise, heat, sleep, water, nutrient intake, the balance of proteins, healthy fats and carbs in the diet. There's many factors that need to be looked at. So for those of you out there that are wondering why you're not better because you eliminated all the refined and processed sugars, now you have your answer. But how your diet and your lifestyle and your genetics has affected you currently, if you still have complaints, that's something that if you adapt a blood detective mentality and look at your chemistry, look at your blood hormones, look at absorption, malabsorption markers, look at inflammation markers, look at cardiovascular markers and various other systems, you can generally figure it out and adjust your diet and lifestyle accordingly. So I'm going to go down a list of some of the questions that I was asked regarding, is it true that sugar can create this or that problem? So when I mention sugar, I'm talking about the refined and processed sugars, mostly sucrose and the added sugars like the high fructose corn syrup and those types of sugars. So the most common question I received was, can sugar suppress the immune system? Sugar can, in fact, suppress what's known as cell-mediated immunity, which would increase our propensity for infections or worsen our ability to manage infections. Excessive sugar or sugar mishandling has also been associated with problems with another part of the immune system known as the humoral immune system. Now, on the other hand, not only can sugar suppress our immune system, it could also cause autoimmune problems, creating too high of an immune response as well. Another question I received from many of you is, can sugar increase loss of minerals through the urine? And that's absolutely true. First of all, we need manganese, magnesium, zinc, for example, and also B vitamins, which are of course not minerals, but the point is that high blood sugar or excessive sugar intake will deplete us of a variety of minerals due to urine loss and the physiologic stress of the sugar, not to mention the sugary foods that many of us might consume from time to time are basically void of most nutrition, including the minerals. Next, can sugar increase inflammation? Again, an astounding yes. They know that inflammation will cause, for example, what's known as glycosylation of a certain kind of hemoglobin in the blood. And that is what's measured to determine if someone's a pre-diabetic or a diabetic, what's called glycosylated hemoglobin. And the process of glycosylation is a harmful, what's called cross-linking of proteins. And the same sort of damage that occurs or is caused by sugar as it acts upon hemoglobin, increasing what's called hemoglobin A1C, that's the diabetic marker, anything on a blood test from a 5.7% in the body of total hemoglobin A1C or above is pre-diabetic and diabetic. But keep in mind that the health problems that are associated with blood sugar increasing over the course of time do not just show up when one is declared to be a pre-diabetic or a diabetic. The problem occurs over the course of months, years, or even decades of high blood sugar exposure to tissues causing inflammation, causing glycosylation, triggering hormonal effects, and impacting healing and generating more stress hormones. This is a vicious cycle of inflammation and degeneration. And we also should be aware that sugar can cause and worsen heart and blood vessel disease. Blood sugar adds to a more acidic pH or acid-base balance of the blood. That perpetuates, of course, inflammation, but also degeneration of the protein structures that make up heart and vessels in the body, causing hardness of tissues. And anything that creates hardness of tissues, refined and processed foods, poor diet, stress, nutritional deficiencies, various diseases, anything that causes hardness of the tissues, therefore has caused hardness of the cells or the cell membranes that compose those tissues. And when the cell membranes and the cells are affected, they simply don't work well. And therefore the organ doesn't work well. And therefore the organ system doesn't work well. And then you don't work well. The next question is, which is a pretty straightforward one, can sugar cause diabetes? Well, the prevailing opinion on this in traditional circles, believe it or not, is that sugar does not cause diabetes. What they'll say instead is that it's the mishandling of sugar that causes diabetes. Fair enough. Next, can sugar cause fatigue? Yes. Sugar can cause an abrupt rise in blood sugar, and then eventually with chronic consumption, hypoglycemia, or a problem with your body using sugar, adding to fatigue. Can sugar worsen infections? Absolutely. Not all sugars affect sugar in the body, in the blood, the same. For example, fruit will not usually perpetuate fungal infections in a diabetic or anyone else for that matter. But many of my patients have reported to me over the years that they've been told not to have fruit because it's bad and it'll cause the growth of infections like fungi, and it's fuel for the fire. In the most immunosuppressed people, that might be true, although that's not proven. I think it's the sucrose and the glucose and a poor diet overall that lowers immunity, which then is perpetuated by that poor diet, which has various infections get out of control. Sugar obviously can cause tooth decay. As far as sugar contributing to obesity, obviously that'll happen because sugar is high in calories. So just from a calorie perspective, not to mention that sugar adversely affects hormones, which can send the wrong signals to fat cells. So fat cells are resistant to what's known as lipolysis, or breaking down of the fat cell. The next question is, and this relates to cardiovascular disease, can excessive sugar intake reduce the good cholesterol, the so-called HDL cholesterol? That's been proven. It'll also elevate the bad cholesterol, the LDL, and particularly a form of LDL known as the small particle LDL. It's the small particles that are atherogenic that really add to the hardening of the arteries and the cardiovascular and stroke risk. Can sugar cause depression? Sure. Well, the brain uses glucose for energy along with ketones, but if sugar levels are depressed in the nervous system and other body systems, then the energy producing part of the cells known as the mitochondria will not work well. And therefore, depression can result in low energy, malaise, lack of what's known as affect. Another very common question: can sugar feed cancer cells, and can it cause cancer? Well, I think it's reasonable to think that the answer is yes, because if sugar is known to depress immunity, and many forms of cancer involved a suppressed immune system, where that immune system cells do not recognize abnormal or cancerous cells. If the immune system was not depressed from sugar consumption, for example, and all the nutritional issues and other health problems that excessive sugar over the course of years of consumption can cause, then any condition resulting from lowered immunity can be increased in incidence, such as various cancers. Can sugar exacerbate premenstrual syndrome? Yes. Remember, blood sugar levels, which are affected by not just the sugar we eat, but lots of things, but the blood sugar level is controlled by insulin and other hormones like glucagon, and these hormones affect yet other hormones like testosterone and growth hormone and estrogens, So the point here is that through a cascade of hormonal events, sugar can adversely exacerbate premenstrual syndromes. Can sugar contribute to acne? Yep. Sugar can cause an overgrowth of undesirable organisms in the intestinal tract, and that is associated with a leaky gut syndrome, which may be associated with acne. Sugar also can affect, as I've just mentioned, hormones, and also how the body manages different fatty acids, which can accumulate in the skin and promote local inflammation, creating acne. Can sugar contribute to memory loss, like dementia, or just, you know, your everyday average memory loss, or even Alzheimer's disease? Well, probably, because sugar will perpetuate atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, which can affect the circulation of blood to the brain. And also, sugar can oxidize or break down brain cells known as neurons, which a loss of neurons will result in memory issues. So that was just a few ways in which blood sugar could affect memory. Can sugar affect or suppress the release of growth hormone? That's a great question, and thank you for the person who contributed that one. Sugar and carbohydrates in general will directly suppress the production of growth hormone, and we need a certain amount of growth hormone in the body for repair of tissues. So the next question is related. Can sugar enhance or speed up the aging process? Well, sugar does increase the aging process potentially of blood vessels, causing them to harden as if they were much, much older blood vessels. Sugar, as we discussed a few minutes ago, can cause glycosylation of hemoglobin, increasing what's known as glycosylated hemoglobin, which is also known as hemoglobin A1C. Most of you have heard of that. And as the hemoglobin A1C increases and cardiovascular risk increases, degeneration in a number of body systems, including the nervous system and immune system, is affected, and those are signs of accelerated aging. Can sugar raise insulin levels and increase insulin resistance? Yes, that is very well established. When we have sugar, or even a moderate amount, but we don't have a balanced diet, we could have a dramatic, sudden increase in blood sugar, and the pancreas must respond to that by making insulin, which puts the glucose in the cells. That's how you can remember what insulin does. It lowers the blood sugar by moving the glucose into the cells so it's metabolized properly. If it's not metabolized properly, we get all kinds of problems. But if that insulin is not produced enough, or the insulin is so bombarded with blood sugar issues constantly, it becomes a bit resistant. Just like some people are somewhat resistant to homeless people. You know, you see them enough every day, you get used to them. I'm not saying you do, but I think you get the point. The same thing happens with sugar. When the cells or insulin cells or the insulin hormone is constantly expected to respond to high blood sugar, it can become resistant. Does sugar increase triglyceride levels? Potentially, yes. Many people that I see are quite surprised to learn, apparently because they were never told by their other docs, that their hypertriglyceridemia or high triglycerides are generally caused by blood sugar problems. And high triglycerides are usually a precursor to a condition known as metabolic syndrome or syndrome X. A very mysterious sounding, but it's a real condition, a real diagnosis, where a person will have high blood lipids like triglycerides, particularly triglycerides. They'll tend to also have low HDL, the good stuff, and high LDL, the bad stuff, along with hypertension and high blood pressure, which is hypertension. So there's high blood cholesterol, there is high blood sugar, and high blood pressure. Those three components are what is metabolic syndrome or syndrome X, a very commonly underdiagnosed problem. If one is aware that they have metabolic syndrome or syndrome X, a comprehensive health plan is needed, not merely running to a medication. Can sugar contribute to anxiety? Absolutely. Could even cause it, because the physiologic changes that result when the body is struggling to manage blood sugar could create a feeling of anxiousness, of shaking, of racing thoughts, of increased heart rate, of sweating. That sounds like anxiety to me. Another question I was asked is, can sugar contribute to multiple sclerosis? And let's extend that to other autoimmune diseases. I would say yes, simply because we know that sugar can affect the health of the nervous system. Sugar can oxidize or age brain cells. Oxidation is actually what a plaque is. A plaque is an area of the brain in a person with multiple sclerosis and also other health problems. That is an oxidative problem. It may not have been caused in a person with MS from sugar initially, but sugar probably won't help. The same, I feel, is true for various autoimmune diseases. We'll have an entire show on autoimmune diseases, in particular dietary and supplement plans for them. Another question is, can sugar contribute to problems with pH or acid-base balance in the body? Yes. Not only will blood sugar do that, glucose, when it's mixed with water, has a very low pH, and that's what makes it acidic. If you add acidic products to your diet, and if your diet is predominantly full of acidic products, like the standard American or SAD or SAD diet tends to be, then you'll have individuals walking around with health problems that are known as subclinically acidotic. That means that they have a pH that is lower than average, something like a 7.2, 7.25, when the average blood pH is between 7.35 and 7.45. And you might be thinking, well, 7.2, 7.25, it's supposed to be 7.4. Is that really so much of a difference? Yes. For every 0.1 movement of pH, either up or down, that's 10 times different. That's why a pH scale is known as a logarithmic scale. So very, very important to manage pH, because all the organs are floating around in a pH. The organs have created the pH partly as a result of diet. So it's this feedback between the abnormal pH the organs create, and they spit that all into the vat, so to speak, and all the organs saute in that, and then they get signals from that lower pH or sugary pH. And then that's a very hard cycle to break. Can sugar increase cholesterol? We answered that earlier. Yes, various types of cholesterol, total cholesterol can be increased. Triglycerides increased, LDL increased, the good cholesterol, HDL, decreased. Can sugar contribute to ADD and ADHD in children? Of course. Do we really need scientific studies to figure this one out? Just see what happens when you feed a kid a lot of these foods. And if you can't figure it out then, see what happens when you replace the foods for several weeks. Behavior tends to improve, irritability tends to improve, focus tends to improve, energy. They just feel better. Can sugar cause drowsiness? I think we've answered that with the response of the pancreas, the increased insulin and decreased insulin response to sugar intake can create drowsiness. The next question was, can sugar contribute to food allergies? I don't think that sugar will cause food allergies per se, but there is some truth to this, perhaps, because I've observed that if people have an unhealthy diet, which will often consist of too high of a sugar intake, they tend to develop a fermentation in their small intestine. And that fermentation process creates a lot of local distress in the small intestine. And the small intestine will develop an overgrowth of unfavorable bacteria and sometimes unfavorable fungal organisms, along with inflammatory changes to the wall of the small intestine, what is popularly known as leaky gut syndrome. And if there are a bunch of other symptoms involved too, it might move forward and then develop into something called small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Now, what I'm getting at here is that if inflammation occurs in the lining of the small intestine, if you eat certain foods, even healthy foods, let's say like broccoli, if you eat those foods, they might, some of the undigested products of those foods might leak out through the leaky gut. And the immune system would notice this, assuming it's reasonably healthy. And it would produce antibodies or immunoglobulins against the food. Those immunoglobulins are known as IgE immunoglobulins or IgG, just to name two of the more popular ones. The IgE immunoglobulins are known to generally represent what are called immediate type 1 hypersensitivity allergy reactions, meaning you'll know right away if you're allergic or generally within 12 hours or 2 days, something like that. It varies among people. And then there is the IgG antibody that could form against those partially undigested food products that have leaked out of the small intestine from the effects of sugar upon the small intestine lining. So many people come to me with these complex food allergy test results, but their testing shows inflammation, their diets show lots of sugar, and there are other factors that I mentioned at the beginning of the show that could cause sugar imbalance problems and therefore lend themselves to false positive allergy tests. So there's a certain criteria that I go through first before I spend a person's money on allergy testing, which sometimes the results are so ridiculous, a person ends up eating nothing, and that causes other nutritional issues. We need to find solutions to these health problems that are doable, that are not overly complex and neurotic, because then a person has no chance of being successful. The next question is, can sugar cause eczema? Well, dermatologists will tell you we don't know what causes eczema, but I have had patients that we suspected sugar was at least an exacerbating factor, took some photos of their skin, then had them stay off sugar for a bit of time, took some more photos, and had them eat sugar again, and you can see the eczema get angry and red and inflamed. Same with psoriasis. So I would say yes. Next question. Can sugar, and this is a very advanced question, can sugar impair the structure of DNA in children? So DNA is your genetic material. There's DNA and there's RNA. And there is evidence to show that many dietary factors, not merely sugar, but many dietary factors can cause DNA strand breaks and otherwise adversely affect the DNA. Sometimes, and certain researchers believe to such an extent that those problems could be passed on to other generations, even though the individual who developed these DNA breaks due to a poor diet, in their lifetime, they'll pass it on to the next generation. That's pretty messed up. Okay, another question. Could sugars affect enzyme function in the body? Yes, my belief is that excessive sugar will down-regulate the function of certain enzymes. For example, if excess sugar is consumed and it adversely affects blood pH, lowering pH, for example, enzymes that work at a higher pH will struggle to do their jobs or just won't work at all. And we have many hundreds of enzymes in the body that carry on a myriad of essential physiologic functions. Can sugar cause migraines? Yes. Sugar in the form of different foods and simple sugar itself can trigger and does, in fact, trigger migraines in many people. Can sugar contribute to high blood pressure? Yes. Hyperglycemia, along with high blood fats and hardening of the arteries and plaque, may and often do accompany hypertension. And high blood sugar, as I mentioned earlier, causes what are called cross links between proteins, hardening them, and there are proteins that they are the physical structure of blood vessels and of the skin and of the brain. That same type of cross linking is also very commonly seen on the skin and the hands of certain individuals, and we call that age spots. And it's also been shown that the age spots on the skin caused by cross-linking from oxidation of the proteins in the skin seem to be associated with a roughly equivalent amount of the same cross-link plaquing sort of products in the brain. Very interesting and very scary. Can sugar cause atrophy of muscles? Well, again, this is theoretical, but I would say yes. But generally, people who consume a bunch of sugar have unhealthy diets, and they may not exercise as well, and they're aging, for example, so they may have muscle atrophy. But sugar will suppress potentially growth hormone and testosterone, two anabolic hormones that the body makes to retain lean body mass, which includes muscle. So these are just some of the, I think, really insightful questions that many of you have asked when I announced this topic last time, and I thank you for that. We all know that the sugar controversy and the problems with sugar could never be fully addressed in, you know, just under an hour. But I do hope that you found this conversation interesting, to say the least. The only problem is that now you know more than your friends, except for your friends that are super into this stuff. But then again, you're probably that friend. My point being that it's very hard to explain this to others, and explanations usually don't do it for most people. For those of us listening and producing these sorts of shows, clearly we're into this kind of thing. So when we learn new things, it's much easier to implement. But for the average individual that does not have a clue, I think the best way to help them break the sugar habit is to simply set a good example and to slowly integrate little concepts here and there, relating some of the concepts in the show to their health and their health problems. And you know what'll happen? Many of you have seen this. They'll eliminate bread, or they'll eliminate ice cream, or maybe they'll stop eating their candy, and they'll say something like, "I haven't felt so great in years. Do you think it could be those changes I made?" They really will be amazed at the changes. In terms of testing, blood glucose is a test for blood sugar that day. To get an average of your blood sugar over the last 2 or 3 months, you want a hemoglobin A1C test. To get an average of your blood sugar over the course of about 2 to 3 weeks, that's a fructosamine test. But remember, to assess the effects of blood sugar on the body, you don't simply check blood sugar. Blood sugar affects hormones, various inflammatory mediators, and other compounds like homocysteine, ferritin, of course, insulin, something called C-peptide, something else called C-reactive protein, tests of absorption, gut health, nervous system, nutrient levels, vitamins, minerals, tests of absorption. All of these would be used to assess how and if someone's diet has affected a variety of systems, measuring plaquing in arteries, hardness of arteries, reduced blood flow, the function of the autonomic nervous system. There are many non-invasive ways. Many of them I've just mentioned, the last several, are non-invasive, and they let you know the effects, or at least the effects of one's overall lifestyle, and then you make certain changes in your diet. Vitamins, exercise, foods, supplements, reduction in stress, hydration, that sort of thing. Then you recheck these test results and watch them improve. Thank you, everyone, again for tuning in to Ask the Blood Detective. The next show will be all about cardiovascular disease, what lifestyle measures you can take to reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease, to reverse many aspects of cardiovascular disease, the role of specific dietary interventions, testing, nutrients, how to determine what you need and when you need it. I hope you join us. Again, send those questions to me at www.integratednutritionny.com or info@integratednutritionny.com. You can call my office and schedule an appointment with me for your personal health by calling 914-242-8844. Have a wonderful night. See you soon. Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girl, start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good.